After a while, there's a knock on the door. Tom staggers over and opens it. It's Jane, Mary, and Lois, sent by David to see what charitable work needs to be done. David figures that if Mary's shopping, he's safe. Time, 4:30 p.m. At around 4:30, two groups of two guys arrive separately. These are Joe's people who are scheduled to be back later in the night. They buy beers and wander around looking the place over. After they finish their beers, they leave. Lance has had each of their driver's licenses scanned. Todd builds a database on them and has them photographed from different angles by the security cameras. They're mainly petty criminals from the Metro Omaha area, all residing at the same address in Council Bluffs. Time, 6:30 p.m. Mark and Sid arrive at Tom and Bob's motel at 6:30 p.m. as planned. Mark knocks on their door but gets no response. He peeks through the window and sees nothing, no lights. He looks around the parking lot for their car, which he knows from Joe's warehouse, not there. He goes back to the car and he and Sid wait, thinking they may be late coming back from supper. After about 15 minutes, Mark says to Sid, "This isn't right. I don't think those guys would really be late after what happened the other day. Maybe we should go try to break in and see what's really there." "Right. Seems really strange they aren't here by now. I'll do it," says Sid, reaching around to the back of the seat to pick up a few tools. Mark watches from the car as Sid skillfully cracks the lock and is in. The light switches on, and Mark, looking to see if they're being watched, jogs quickly to the open door. Once inside the room, Mark looks around and says, "Damn it, looks like they've cleared out." "Kind of looks that way," answers Sid. "They left the gas and bottles, though. Let's get back to the car. You pick up the bottles and the rags, and I'll take care of the gas." Back at the car, Mark empties the gas can into the car's tank. Sid shuts out the light, closes the door, and returns to the car. Mark puts the empty gas can in the trunk, hops in the car, and dials Pete. David's screen beeps an alarm, and a window opens up. After a few seconds, it displays a phone number followed by Pete's name. Mark's phone is routing through the club's communication systems. David reaches over and clicks the cursor on the loudspeaker icon in the window, and the speakers give off the sound of a phone ringtone. David sits back and says, "Well, I guess they know Tom and Bob have skipped town. Mark's calling Pete." Pete answers, and they hear Mark say, "Pete, we're at Bob and Tom's motel. We can't find them. They're not here, and their car isn't either. We broke in their room, and there were no clothes, no bags, just the gas can and bottles and rags. They've cleared out." "You're kidding." "Nope, they're gone. No sign of them." "Fucking bastards. They're dead men. Joe said he thought they might pull something." "Damn it. Okay, clean the room out and then back to your motel. The deal's off for tonight. I'll talk to Joe, and I'll see what he can arrange for Friday," says Pete. His phone clicks off. "Back to the motel for us. Party's canceled," says Mark. "You know, maybe we should take Tom and Bob's hint ourselves," says Sid. "No money in that, man. Pete's not happy, and Jack won't be either. We're only bit players in this. No sense becoming one of the targets." Although his phone is off, the microphone continues to transmit their conversation back to Moroon. Mark and Sid find a restaurant in a small bar before going back to the motel. Back at Moroon, Tom says, "Ah, well, I guess we're off Pete's Christmas card list." "We've definitely been moved to a different list, dude," says Bob. Then the screen flashes again, and this time they hear the phone numbers being punched as they see digits appear. The legend promptly identifies the caller as Pete and the destination as Joe. The video from Pete's room appears in its own window. Joe answers, and Pete says, "Just got a call from Mark. He says those fuck-ups Tom and Bob have split. When Mark went to their motel, they were gone. All they found in their room was the gas can, bottles, and rags. I don't know how they could pull anything. I don't think they had $20 between them until they finished this job. I'll check around and see if anyone knows anything," says Joe. "When I'm done with this business, I'll deal with them personally. Wonder if that Shay was somehow involved. Some of his people may have tracked Tom and Bob back to their motel. That's possible. He knew who they were and why they were here. So, what's the plan now?" says Joe. "This Shay's becoming a fucking pain in the ass. Looks like the party's off for tonight. We'll have to try again tomorrow. I've told Mark and Sid to stand by. Can you tell your guys?" "No problem." "And we'll need some people to replace Tom and Bob. Can you get a couple of guys who don't have a whole lot of sense and won't be missed?" "Yeah, I know a couple of guys from Sioux City who'll do just about anything for a few bucks and a couple of meth hits. Let's just say their judgment isn't very sound on a good day. A couple of snorts and they're animals. Just my kind of guys. See if you can arrange to have them ready for tomorrow night. Meet me at the hotel tomorrow morning at 8 and we'll talk. In the meantime, see if you can find those two shitheads. If you do, blow their fucking brains out. In the meantime, I gotta call Jack and let him know what's happened." "Okay, probably a good idea. Anything else?" "Find a couple of untraceable assault rifles." "No problem. See you tomorrow." Connection goes dead and the window disappears. Chapter 5. Friday, January 12. Time, 8 a.m. Friday morning is cold and windy, but that's just about every day in Omaha in January. Joe arrives at Pete's hotel and parks on the street about a half a block away. He spots Pete sitting in a chair reading the newspaper in the lobby waiting for him. "Morning, Pete. How you doing?" Pete folds the paper, gets up, and shakes hands with Joe, saying, "Looks a little cold out there." "Oh, nothing really. It's nearly minus 10. Kind of warm, actually." Pete laughs and says, "I kind of wish I were in Florida right now. You and me both. Come on, let's get some breakfast." One side of the atrium is a restaurant surrounded by ficus trees with fairy lights and tropical plantings, somewhat out of place in Nebraska in the winter, but they thrive in the abundant light from the glassed ceiling 9 stories above. At one end is a small fountain with water gurgling down rocky cascades into a pool with tropical fish surrounded by small flowers. The buffet area is immediately below below Pete's ninth-floor balcony, so he gets the full effect of the aromas from each meal as they rise unobstructed through the open space above. Joe drapes his coat over a chair at the table they've selected, and he and Pete head for the buffet. They get plates and fill up on scrambled eggs, bacon, hash browns, gravy, biscuits, and coffee, then return for some side dishes of fruit and little tubs of butter and jam. They return to their secluded table in the corner. 9 a.m. Mike knocks on David's door, and he and Jay enter. David is at the table eating breakfast. Mike says, "Did you get anything from the Regency?" "No, they didn't meet in Pete's room." We think Joe left his cell phone in his coat pocket, which he hung over a chair. All we could pick up was some room noise and some muffled voices. Sean was in the lobby watching. He tried to get a table close to them, but it wasn't possible. They spoke for quite a while, but we don't know what the plan is. Later, Joe made a phone call to a number in Sioux City to arrange for two guys to meet him at the warehouse around 11, but he didn't say much on the phone to them. My guess is that they're Tom and Bob's replacements. "Did you try the sloppy cream trick?" "Yep, phone must have been on vibrate. He didn't answer it." "Crap. So what do we do now?" "Well, now we just wait and hope one of them uses a cell phone or speaks while we've got a microphone. My guess is that they'll probably try to do something like what they planned last night." "Where's the coffee?" "Over there. Don't hog all the bacon, so to speak." "Any idea what the assault rifles are for?" asks Jay. "Not a clue, I'm afraid." Lance is getting a bit worried about them as well. "So am I," replies Jay. "Mikey gets very difficult when there are loud noises." "Yeah, I guess that. Anyway, not much we can do besides wait and watch and try to think of every contingency. They're coming and there's no way to stop them." Time, 11 a.m. By 11 a.m., Joe is back at the warehouse where Mark and Sid are already waiting for him. Once inside the office, Joe calls out on the paging system for Dan, Bill, Roger, and Nick to come to the office. These are the guys from the warehouse crew he's picked to do the job tonight. Two others, Steve and Harry, have just arrived from Sioux City. Joe takes them out into the warehouse, leaving the others behind in his office. Here he explains the basics of what he wants done and negotiates their price. They agree and he returns to the office with them where the others are waiting. "Let's get some lunch, guys. It's on me. I want to go over the plans. There have been a few changes, and Steve and Harry will be taking Tom and Bob's place," says Joe as they get up and head for the diner up the street. Todd records this small bit of news from the mic attached to the window. Once at the diner, they hang up their coats on a rack near the door and sit at a table apart from the others and order lunch. Joe's cell phone is still in his coat pocket. Mark's and Sid are in their pants pockets. The table again blocks their voices, and all Todd can hear is muffled noise. He doubts the donut scam will work twice, but he tries it anyway. It doesn't. Mark puts his phone back in his pants pocket. Todd conference calls with David, Lance, Mike, and Jay and gives them the bad news. Joe met with his people, but they went to a diner up the street. "I don't know what they said, so we're still mainly flying blind." David agrees, but adds, "And we still have no ideas what the rifles are for?" "None that I know of," answers Todd. Lance interjects, "Could be just some extra firepower for the top floor and nothing more." "Let's hope so," says Jay. Time, 5 p.m. It's Friday evening, about 5 p.m. While Mike, Jay, Tom, and Bob carefully observe the security camera feeds from David's apartment on the big screen, Todd tracks the main door and outside cameras from his command console at the end of the bar. Lance is near the main entrance wearing his mic and headset. As the crowd builds for the night, David and the others watch closely. The camera angles displaying on the monitors switch quickly from one view to another, making the rounds of the club. David is out on the balcony looking down on the crowd. Security is high. At the main door, metal detectors probe each patron with electric fields seeking the telltale magnetic eddies of unseen metal objects. Meters and LEDs on the security desk flicker. If they detect anything, one of the security guys does a quick pat-down. The two main entrance security guards are armed and a third is not far away. IDs of those not recognized as regulars are swiped through the card reader, while everyone is photographed by security cameras. Then Sid is spotted as he enters the main door at about 9:30. Todd keys a call to all headsets. "Party time, people. Sid's here, and Mark's soon to follow. I guess it's a go for tonight." "Roger that," come replies from several. Mark enters a few minutes later. David returns and Mike points out that their guests have arrived. They watch as Mark and Sid separately cruise around the club, buy drinks, eat snacks, chat with the crowd, and appear to get progressively buzzed. Lance pages all from his headset. "We just went through their coats. They brought the smoke bombs and some small bottles of gasoline. Looks like the same plan. I swapped the smoke bombs and replaced the gasoline with kerosene and olive oil. It won't do much now. It might not even light." "Olive oil?" Mike whispers to Jay. Time, 10 p.m. As it nears 10 o'clock, Mark and Sid wander back towards the cloakroom. Lance keys his mic for all to hear and says, "Hey guys, Sid and Mark are getting ready to make their move. Keep an eye on them. Let's play this cool. Stay on the perimeter until it's time. You guys got your trash barrels ready?" "Roger that," comes from several unseen voices.